This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. All Americans know the story. In 1607, English adventurers moored their tall-masted ships off the coast of Virginia, declared the rough colony of Jamestown, and came face to face with the American vastness and the original Americans. Things went badly. Chief Powhatan was not happy. Captain John Smith was soon about to be killed. The chief's daughter, Pocahontas, saved his life. Schoolbooks have told the story for eons. Disney told the story. Now filmmaker Terrence Malick plumbs its poetry in the ravishing new film, The New World. Up next on Point, first, Contact, and the facts and fiction of the world-changing meeting at Jamestown. Joining me now from Washington is David Price, author of Love and Hate in Jamestown, John Smith, Pocahontas, and the Start of a New Nation. David Price, thanks very much for joining us.
Hello.
And with us from Williamsburg, Virginia, is Danielle Moretti-Langholtz, professor of cultural anthropology and director of the American Indian Resource Center at the College of William and Mary. Danielle Moretti-Langholtz, thank you for being with us.
Tom, it's nice to be with you today.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jack, good to have you aboard.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
Danielle, let me go first to you. You pay very close attention to Jamestown. What is there, what was there, and what happened there? Have you seen the movie? Do we have the story right here? Is First Contact the right way of looking at this?
Well, I have seen the movie. I think it's a beautiful film. But I don't think it's so much a question of do we have the story right. I don't know that we can ever really know the right story. This film is not a documentary, but it is a nuanced portrayal of what it might have been like. And in that, I think there is some value.
David Price, it's gorgeous, it's rapturous, it's in love with nature and, in a way, the naturals, as Terrence Malick has the English adventurers call the Native Americans. How did it strike your authenticity bone, maybe, you know, very factually and at the level of metaphysics or poetry?
Well, Terrence Malick, the director, did an amazing job of recreating the physical culture of both peoples, the English fort, the native villages. When I watched the movie, I really boggled at how much he had gotten right in that respect. The storyline does veer from historical records pretty considerably. So the film is sort of two-faced as far as authenticity goes.
David, would you put us back in the facts of the situation here? We'll look at what the film has to say. And, of course, it puts a romance which did not occur between John Smith and Pocahontas. She did save him, but they were not, at least as I understand you, they weren't romantically involved. But what are the basic facts of this Jamestown story that we need to have to understand the poetry, the meeting of cultures here?
Well, you have, as you said, the English coming across in their three ships, arriving at Jamestown in May of 1607. There's around 105 of them. They're setting foot on territory that's never been visited by English people before, and there's a lot of uncertainty on their part about what they're going to find. The Powhatans, the dominant English native empire of the region, has had some experience with European incursions. The Spanish had several incursions in 1560 and in the early 1570s. So they have some impression of Europeans as well.
And Chief Powhatan was old enough that he might have remembered those even if he had not had direct contact.
Absolutely. Chief Powhatan is thought to have been in his 60s when the English came over in 1607.
So there we are. The stage is set. Jack Beatty, we're going to dive all deeply into the Jamestown story. The movie captures a very lyrical view of it. Terrence Malick loves the beauty of natural Virginia, loves the shore, loves the woods, loves the Native Americans.
He does, and that's in the film. I found the main character a little wanting. I didn't see the spark in John Smith that I think he wanted to see there.
Played by Colin Farrell here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he didn't do it for me. But you know, there was another side to this too. This Virginia company that settled there put a big sell on for this. This was a big. By the end, something like £50,000 was invested in this venture, and Ben Johnson set it up in his play Eastward Ho, the cell of Virginia, and he has a character say, "Why, man, all their dripping pans and their chamber pots are pure gold, and all the chains which had changed up their streets are massy gold. All the prisoners fettered in gold, and for rubies and diamonds they go forth on holiday and gather them by the seashore to hang on their children's coats."
It was all gold and jewels, but Daniel Moretti Langholz, when these adventurers arrived, that's not what it was. It was forests and grass and bush and Native Americans who were hardly living in material splendor.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely not. And I think another aspect of this that is interesting is we see that the success of this fort was not a foregone conclusion. And that is somewhat interesting for us because we're kind of on the other side of history, and here in Williamsburg, getting ready to commemorate the 400th anniversary of the founding of this adventure, this fort, and we kind of think on this side of history, oh, it couldn't have gone any other way. These English adventurers, 105 men and boys, they were going to be successful because they're. Technology was superior, et cetera. And it's interesting for us to ponder that it might not have been. And the world of the Powhatans was different from what they might have been expecting, or as David said, what had been presented and hyped up in England.
We're going to look at that world. David Price, what about the expectations of the adventurers as they set off for the new world shore? Jack Beatty has Ben Johnson send up, but what were they looking for? What did they expect to find, and who were they?
Well, Ben Johnson's send-up really wasn't that far off the mark. The Virginia Company sent people over there, first of all, hoping to find gold, gold and silver, all kinds of riches, as the Spanish had in the Spanish New World. They also hoped that there would be a river passage through the North American continent to the Pacific and obviously from there to the China trade. So these were the mission. These were the two missions that the colonists were sent over with.
And were these tough, experienced adventurers, sailors, pioneers, or something else?
Just the contrary. John Smith becomes a central figure in this story because he's one of the very few who has serious survival experience. He's been a mercenary in Central Europe, has gone through really intense adventures even before he sets foot in Virginia. The rest, many of the rest, are gentlemen who've been pretty much catered to their whole lives, who don't really have much of a work ethic to speak of, and this creates a lot of problems among the English.
Do we have a record, Daniel Moretti Langholz, of what the English thought, their first impressions of the Native Americans that they found?
Well, there are some early records, and these are very, very important to us in trying to reconstruct these early contacts, but also they're very lacking in some important things. These are men who were interested in letting us know where the villages were, or as has been mentioned, kind of the explorations up rivers, because they were trying to find out who's on the ground, how are they connected, what's sort of the nature of the political structure of these indigenous people, and where do these rivers go?
And were they amazed by them, as the movie would have it, or is that a kind of romantic conceit? Were they self-conscious of this portentous meeting of cultures?
Well, I think it's pretty important, as was mentioned, this is not the first interaction. This is the first successful English settlement mm-hmm. in North America, but the Spanish were here, and there were other failed attempts at settlement in the area that today is North Carolina by the English. But if you look at a map, you see it's just an extension of the coastline, and it's not terribly far from the James River. So these people did know one another. There were documents and drawings and illustrations that we rely on today to kind of tease out what were the English views of the people.
David Price, let me put the same question to you, if I may, about what the English saw here in these people. Stephen Hunter in the Washington Post describes The New World, the film, as Bambi versus the flying saucers, these kind of mild, inquisitive locals versus the technology-laden, for that day, English coming in. What do you know of how the English saw this meeting?
Certainly, that would have been the dominant view of the English. In other words, they came to Virginia, saw the natives, and saw primitivity. They wouldn't have put the Romantic gloss on it, that the sort of the Rousseauian gloss that Terrence Malick does, but that certainly is what they would have seen, sort of the state of nature. John Smith takes a different view and has much more respect for the natives' weaponry, bows and arrows, and other aspects of how they live. He sort of understands that they've adapted very well to the countryside and to living there, and he understands that the bows and arrows, although they seem primitive next to English guns, they are lethal and they are to be respected.
Jack Beattie, primitivism they may have seen, but yet at this time there was that Rousseau view that was ready to invest the natural, the primitive, with a kind of glory.
Yes, and to see what had happened, if in other words, a fresh start, and you hear that in the ruminations of Smith. We have a clean slate. Later in that century, John Locke would build his philosophy around that idea. The tabula rasa, the clean slate, we can begin again. That European civilization, after emerging from the Middle Ages into the early modern period, could get a fresh start in the New World. And yes, it carried that freight for them. And of course, it also carried the terrible disappointment when Virginia in particular turned out to be such a punishing place. I think something only of like 39 of the 105 men who first came over survived the first year. And it was a death trap for people. Nevertheless, this romance persisted along with the realistic motives. The promoter of this, Richard Hakluyt, the writer, presented his discourse on Western planning to Queen Elizabeth to massage her consent. Mm. And he comes up with four reasons. He said, well, we should go there so that we can bridle, our people can bridle the kings of Spain. We can arrest his fishing fleets. Second, we can enlarge the gospel of Christ by converting the inhabitants. And he slyly notes, and we can send ministers over there who otherwise might be coining new opinions. Economically, he said, it would allow us not only to yield all the commodities of Europe, Africa, and Asia, but the colonists would also buy our manufactured goods, the mercantilist system in fine, which, of course, would prevail in the colonies and help to produce the American Revolution. And finally, Hakluyt says, a Western planting would provide for, quote, the manifold employment of numbers of idle men, England swarming at this day with valiant youths rusting.
Danielle Moretti-Langholz, you can see there's a lot of thinking going into this.
Well, I agree with what was said. This was a discussion in England at the time about had they their own people sort of sunk into a kind of decline. And looking over here, which tells us they did know something about Native people from these earlier interactions, Native people in North America, and looking to them to kind of revitalize the society. But I would say it wasn't Bambi versus flying saucers. And I, again, think that this point is made in the movie. Mm. The people were barely hanging on in the fort, not doing well, and the death rate was very high.
Sinking
they had
into
to
madness,
rely
almost.
On the native community mm-hmm. for support, for food, for understanding the climate, the plants, etc., in order to survive. And it, not shown in the film, at one point, the entire fort is abandoned, and everybody gets on the ship to go home, and at that point they meet a resupply ship coming in from England, and everyone turns around and goes back. So there was a moment when Jamestown was abandoned.
It was as close a thing as you can imagine here. Daniel, what about the Native Americans' impressions or understanding of these men who were showing up on their shore at Jamestown? What do we know? What comes down to us about exactly how they saw these arrivals, these intruders?
Well, we know a lot as part of my work with oral history and working with the descendant community today. There are stories and impressions. These people, the Europeans, weren't looked at as really being men from a high civilization, not just with clothing, bathing habits, other sorts of things that they didn't know very much. But initially, the Virginia Indians didn't think these people were going to stay. There were no women in that fort, and they probably saw this as a trading operation. And there are also, there is some discussion that the native people thought, well, they picked a really lousy place to even put this fort, but we'll let them stay there. Native people thought initially that they could control what was going to happen. And for a time, it appeared that they did. But, of course, that wasn't the long-term outcome.
The movie paints a romance between John Smith and Pocahontas, played amazingly by Corianka Kilcher in the film. In history, Danielle, Pocahontas was 11 years old. She did save John Smith's life.
Yes.
What's known about exactly how and why she did that?
Well, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that, Tom, in the contemporary community today. And what people have told me is that that ritual where he is saved, that's an adoption ritual. And if we think that through, that this makes John Smith her older brother, not a love interest.
But of course, ritually, within that community.
Ritually, which then gives them the opportunity to be together in public and et cetera. A lot of the notion that there was this love interest between them comes from the later stories when Pocahontas, then Rebecca, goes to England. She doesn't see Smith for a number of months and then sees him and is quite emotionally upset by it. This is interpreted as, this revival of this love interest. But she thought that he was dead, possibly. And also, maybe is quite offended by the fact that it takes so long for him to contact her when she's in his land.
David Price, in the movie, and in fact, Pocahontas is baptized. She becomes Rebecca. She marries John Rolfe, one of the first tobacco farmers in the Chesapeake region there. But what about that first saving? What did you find in your research about how and why Pocahontas stepped forward as an 11-year-old girl to save this European who showed up in their midst?
Well, the historical facts there are really in contention even today among historians. John Smith is the only eyewitness for that particular episode. It is known from multiple English eyewitnesses that Pocahontas later saves John Smith's life a second time, a couple years later in 1609.
In what circumstances?
Well, it's actually a little bit similar to an episode that's portrayed in the movie. In the historical episode, she tips off John Smith to an ambush that her father's planned, mm-hmm. which is to kill him as well as a visiting party that John Smith is with. She comes in the middle of the night, warns Smith, tears streaming down her cheeks. Smith offers to reward her with some trinkets that are valued by the natives. She refuses these, saying that if she's seen with them, she'd be dead to a certainty. And then she runs off into the night.
And he's warned, and as the movie portrays it, that was critical to the project going on. Danielle Murdy Langholz, as a consequence of that, or all this, I guess, Pocahontas is banished, essentially, cut off by her father, Chief Powhatan. Does that line up with history? Is that why she ends up resident in Jamestown?
Actually, she's kidnapped, and you do see the English kidnap her. And you kind of see this in the movie, although it's not really clear what's happening. And she is a prisoner first on the ships in the James River for a number of months and then in the fort. And one thing that I thought was very interesting about the movie, you know, most people don't know about this kidnapping of her. This is after Smith is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But you see this kind of isolation of her and this what it might have been like to be sort of trapped between these two worlds in this fort. And I think that it, that's of value here, that that Malick is presenting this for us to consider.
Incredibly,
because it's usually glossed over in history and anthropology.
Incredibly well played by Kilcher. But at that point, she had been cut off by her father, the chief?
Yes, yeah.
So she was kind of wandering between these cultures at
well,
first.
Well, she's a prisoner. The English are using her as a pawn so that Powhatan and his warriors do not attack the fort.
Danielle Moretti-Langholz, I know we have to let you go, but give us, before you do, your sense of the poetry, the magic, or the tragedy of this meeting in Jamestown. How do you look back on it?
Well, I look back on this as the beginning of a real change in the control of land, change in to the traditional authority and leadership of tribal people, an increase in intertribal conflict as Native people try to situate themselves to deal with these newcomers. But I also think it's important for us to realize there still are descendant communities, descendants of these Powhatan tribes living among us. And it's important to look back at this particular moment in history to help us understand where we are today and how we got there. Mm.
Danielle Moretti-Langholz, thank you very much for being with us this
thank
hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Danielle Moretti-Langholz, professor of cultural anthropology, director of the American Indian Resource Center at the College of William and Mary. She consulted on Terrence Malick's movie, The New World. We've been joined by David Price, author of Love and Hate in Jamestown, John Smith, Pocahontas, and the Start of a New Nation. Jack Beatty's with us. And right now, from Richmond, Virginia, Steve Adkins. He is chief of the Chickahominy tribe in Virginia. The Chickahominy people were independent of Chief Powhatan's Federation of Tribes that met the settlers there, but occasionally allied with him. Chief Adkins was in the movie The New World as one of the chiefs witnessing the wedding of Pocahontas and John Rolfe. Steve Adkins, Chief Adkins, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, how are you?
We're well. What did you make of the movie, sir?
Well, I talked to Terry Malick prior to the filming, and I asked how would the Indians be treated. I said I'd hate to see them come across as barbarians and savages who just wantonly wrought destruction on the settlers. And toward that end, I think he did well. I think the if you see the movie, you won't get the feeling that the natives are in fact barbarians who just kill randomly.
On the contrary, they're sort of noble, natural, and beautiful. Steve Adkins, in the film, there's a moment portrayed, I'm sure you've seen it, where the local population come across these settlers in grassy expanse near the shore, and they're sort of touching their armor, looking into their eyes, trying to figure out these Europeans. Did that ring true to you as you sort of reach back, try and imagine what that must have been like, that first meeting? Does that look to you like what it might have been?
Well, that kind of left me cold because I think the settlers would have been looking at the natives with some amazement too. So
A two-way street of amazement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when you look back on the outcome of this story, are you able, as a Native American, to see beauty here, or is this all just a precursor to tragedy? As you look back.
Well, as I look back, it was a precursor to tragedy. I mean, I saw a loss of culture or acts of culture stolen, language stolen. I saw land stolen. I saw, a diminution of culture that we have struggled for 400 years to regain. And when you look at the whole scheme of things, you know, the last 400 years represents less than 3% of the existence of my people on this land. But look what's happening in the interim. Streams polluted. You know, you wouldn't dare drink water from the James River today. So lots of things have happened that I don't feel good about. I say that. I still think I live in the best country in the world. I heard earlier in the show a reference to the first seating of representative government. Mm-hmm. Well, that representative government spoke to free Englishmen. Mm-hmm. You know, I had freedoms. My folks had freedom before the Englishmen arrived. We had freedom of speech, freedom of religion. So this new representative government didn't really ring true to me, along with it came rule of law and land title. very alien, perverse terms. We didn't need land title, you know. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, lots of those things that people lift up ring hollow to Native people because they really didn't relate to us.
A blink in time, Chief Steve Adkins says, and not necessarily happy with what's emerged from it. Yet a momentous meeting. There's no way around that. David Price, what about the path from 1607 to 1622 when there's a famous Native American pushback, uprising, massacre of many of the settlers there? And what about the trials along the way?
What I think we don't see at all in the movie that we should see is Chief Powhatan sizing up the situation in a very canny way, trying for a while to turn the English presence to his advantage. Then after Smith leaves, understanding that there's really no hope for any advantage from the English, and tightening a noose around the colony that starves out 80% of the English who were there. So it's in the movie, it's sort of presented as this thing that sort of happens for no reason, mm-hmm. and that's really not quite on the mark.
And in history, David Price, when does the local population figure out that this is going to be overwhelming if they don't push back and really go all out? The 1622 uprising in the movie, as I understand it, it's one of the other Native Americans who goes to England with Pocahontas, who comes back and ultimately leads that uprising, an advisor to Powhatan. Is that correct?
Yes and no. The person who goes with Pocahontas to England is not Opechancanough, Powhatan's brother, who eventually becomes chief. Another man is sent with Pocahontas, comes back, brings back reports of the English land and how populous the place is. He's told by this individual, Timocomo, he's called, is told to keep track, to make a count of how many English men and women he sees. He lands at Plymouth and very quickly realizes, you know, it's an impossible task. There's thousands, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. And this is the report that he brings back. And this, I think, helps to catalyze Opechancanough into action. He becomes the overall head of the Powhatan Empire. Mm. And as you say, in 1622, he's alarmed by what he sees as the English settlements are encroaching more and more on the countryside up and down the James River. And so he launches what is really a brilliant surprise attack on the morning of March 22nd, 1622. People are caught completely unaware in settlements up and down the James River. The English are attacked with their own tools by Native men who come there. And this
I'd like to add one thing here, though. In 1610, the Passamaquoddies were annihilated. In 1614, mm-hmm. the Chickahominy engaged a treaty with the settlers, so some things led up to 1622.
Oh, absolutely. I don't want
to. Understood. Chief Adkins, and of course there was a big death toll then, but a big death toll on all sides ultimately here. Chief Adkins, we have half a minute. Could this meeting of cultures have been different, or is the whole story that we know since 1607, was it kind of inevitable when these cultures met?
I don't think there could have been a different outcome. Powhatan saved Jamestown. But that would have been another Jamestown. You know, the lost colony in Roanoke. So eventually, mm-hmm. Where we are is just where we are. We would have gotten here anyway. And this probably doesn't distinguish this from other places. If you look at Australia, if you look at India, you look at places where imperialists have come over and established, the stories are just about the same.
Chief Steve Adkins, chief of the Chickahominy tribe in Virginia, our time is up, but we're very grateful to you for joining us today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay.
And David Price, author of Love and Hate in Jamestown, thanks very much for your perspective today, Mr. Price.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Beatty, last thought goes to you.
Well, it goes to Shakespeare from The Tempest about the discovery of a new world. Oh, wonder how many goodly creatures are there here. How beauteous mankind is. Oh, brave new world that has such people in it.
And it's ours to make of it what we will, what we have. Jack Beatty, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.